Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy, Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome back the incredible voice of the Sioux Falls Canaries, Tanner Hoops. Tanner, thanks for rejoining Kevin and I again.
Hey, guys. I always love talking to you, and I appreciate you having me on.
Well, Tanner, let's talk about the most obvious thing going on around Sioux Falls to now, this incredible win streak the team is going on. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on the streak and what it's meant for the team and the kind of the city right now.
Yeah, it's fun to be able to put some wins together, and we're doing it in ways that we weren't earlier in the season. You know, you look at some of the games and the ways that we've won, we weren't winning those games early on in 2023. You know, we got out hit in all three games against Milwaukee and still found ways to do it. And, you know, and then that's kind of the difference right now, what you're seeing between the team that started the year and who these birds are now. But, you know, it's really fun. There's a palpable buzz, and I keep using that word in the broadcast, but it really is palpable throughout Sioux Falls. You know, the city's kind of been, I don't want to say starved for a winner, but they've wanted something like this, a team that's gotten people excited, made the birdcage feel electric. They've wanted this for years. You know, we made the finals back in 20, and beyond that, we're last in the playoffs in 2010. And, you know, this is the team I think a lot of people have been looking for. You know, we've had a lot of the same group, you know, personnel, what have you. Hasn't changed terribly. Obviously, there have been a few new additions that have contributed, but you know, these guys are gelling. I think they're starting to learn how good they can be. I think we always kind of knew this team had talent on paper, but when you put that all together and it gives you that sense of belief, I think that's what we're seeing right now. I think we're starting to see this team, you know, go out there, play for each other. The chemistry here is awesome. They love playing with each other, for each other. And Mike Byers just hitting all the right buttons. You know, he's not afraid to get up in a guy's face if he knows that he can get more out of him. And guys know that, you know, he only does that because he cares about him and because he wants to help them succeed, and they respond to that. And whatever button he presses seems to be the right one. Not afraid to challenge these guys when they need it, and, you know, sometimes we have. And, you know, that's been one of the most fun things for me, you know, being someone who's close to the team, sees them a lot more than, you know, the public would. When Mike challenges these guys, they respond, and I think that's kind of what you're seeing right now as we put together the streak.
You know, Tanner, one of the interesting things for me watching this team early on was that, you know, I think in previous years you would look at it and you would say, wow, there's just a glaring hole in this team in this area, that the starting pitching wasn't as good as you'd like, or they weren't getting on base. Early on, I just thought, there's really nothing that I would look at this team and go, I don't understand why they're, I mean, here's what I would look at, and I go, this is why this team is losing right now. They look like a team that was pretty solid. It looks like just finally everything has come together for them. Is that kind of the way that you see this right now?
Yeah, I think we've always known how talented this team could be, and I think we're really starting to believe it. You know, some guys have made incredible strides from the start of the season to now. And sure, the roster's changed a little bit. You know, you look back on that first week or so of the season, you know, and it wasn't pretty, let's say, in the pitching side of things. And, you know, a lot of people are saying this could be the Sioux Falls team that gives up the most runs in league history, something like that. And, you know, some personnel has changed, but a lot of guys have made big-time improvements throughout the season. You know, I think of somebody like Ty Colbreth, who got off to a tough start this year, and has turned into one of our most reliable starters right now. Mitchell Walters was a bullpen guy and a high-leverage bullpen guy for us last season. He's leading the team in wins. You know, Charlie Hasty was our most called-upon reliever last year, and now he's got the ninth-inning role. He's flourishing there. And just a lot of guys that are making strides and continuing to get better still feel like they've got another point in their game they can reach. I think that's what we're seeing, that we've always known how good this team can be, and now everyone starts to believe it as we put it together here down the stretch.
You know, I give you and Randy Preston a lot of credit, because you both separately talked to me before the season began and just said, Kevin, this team has a different vibe to it this year. There is something about this team that is different from previous years. Do you feel like this is the evolution of the team you guys envisioned way back in May?
Yeah, I do. You know, we've got winners on this team. We do. We've got a lot of guys who have played at the highest level, and guys who've been successful wherever they've gone. just guys who are, you know, pros and gamers. And I think that's what you need. You know, some of those games last year that we had a chance to win and didn't. And then you can see kind of mentally the guys, or some of them, check out. And this year, you know, you fall upon some tough times. That's going to happen. You're going to have peaks and valleys over the course of a 100-game season. And we're not mentally crumbling when things get tough, you know. And that's probably the biggest thing I noticed from last year to this year, is just the team is stronger mentally, and they really do believe, you know, that we can go out there and we can be somebody that we should expect to win a bowl game whenever we go on the field. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing for me. But, yeah, the vibe certainly is different from last year to this year. You know, we have guys that feel like we're going to go to the ballpark and we're going to get a win. You know, it's just the belief, I think, is maybe not half the battle, but it's a big part of it. And I think that's something that's changed drastically from last year to this year.
Another drastic change, Tanner, that we got so used to those big bashing Sioux Falls Canaries team. It looked like Mike went in an entirely different direction. Really a lot of speed on this club, rank it near the top one or two in the league in stolen bases right now. Early on, it didn't look like that was generating a lot of runs, but you guys are on fire with that lately. Are you feeling like this new game plan that Mike went with this season really is a key for why they're having so much success right now?
Absolutely. I think the evolution of the batting order from opening day to now is awesome. I mean, you look at the box score, and that'll kind of tell the story. Timely hitting, you know, just was not a strength for us early on in the season. We were leaving way too many guys on base. And, you know, I like the way that Mike is going about structuring this lineup. The last couple of weeks or so, they've kind of gone with that double leadoff man, in a sense, where you've got Ozzy Martinez leading off and then Wyatt Ulrichs batting ninth. And, you know, those guys, table setters, what have you. Jordan Barth is one of the best hitters in this league. He just flat out is. And you put him up near the top of the lineup. And then you've got to go through Jabari, Mike, and Darnell, you know, Henry, Hart, Sweeney. I mean, that could be murderer's row in and of itself, and then it doesn't get easier. You know, you get guys like Achenbaugh, Clannon, you know, they've been doing this at a high level for a few years now, and, you know, they're popping those bats. I know you might look at a catcher spot and you think both those guys are batting below 200, but, you know, you look at a little bit deeper into the box score, they're not striking out nearly as much as maybe a season ago, at least in Chamoy's case when we got to see him. They're putting the ball in play. They're making plays. They're being productive. And then on the defensive side of the ball, that's where they really make up for it. You know, it's been fun to see Chamoy's growth from last season to this season. I think that's been one of the biggest things for us. But, you know, like you talked about, adding more speed to the roster this season, stealing a lot more bases and not living and dying by the long ball. You know, we've got guys certainly that can put a drive into one, but it is fun to see a little bit more hesitantly, I'll call it, small ball this season. I do like to see bases being stolen. That's something we didn't do a very good job of last season. And like you said, Rob, we're near the top in that category. And, you know, just putting that kind of pressure on the defense, you know, having a healthy mix between pop, speed, and kind of finding that happy medium, I think is going a long way.
You know, as I mentioned in the story that I wrote last week, the game I saw at the Birdcage against Kane County, the difference in the game, both teams had their share of solo home runs, but the difference was, and on two separate occasions, the Canaries found a way to manufacture runs with speed, with guys running the bases alertly, with guys hitting guys over to the next base. And that was the difference of the game, and that's just something we didn't see in previous years with this ball club.
No, I agree, you know, and that's kind of the timely situational aspect of the game that has continued to get better. You know, Jabari is a great player as it is, but he's our hitting coach as well, and that's something he's still, I think, still trying to find how good he can be. And I think he's continually improving. You know, he's still relatively young, you know, as one of the vets in this league. He's one of the youngest hitting coaches in the association. I think that's something that he's still learning. Yeah, and not to say that he's done a bad job. I think just the more that you've seen, the more you know what to do. And I think that's the case here. And I think we have a really talented young coaching staff, and most of them double as players. And I think those are all guys that are learning from the experience, learning from the situation that they're in, and then applying it to the guys that they coach. And, you know, in a lot of ways, you can help lead by example. And I feel confident in our three ploaches, as they call them. You know, that's what they're doing this season.
And you mentioned Charlie Hasty early on here, a guy who could very well be the top pitcher in the league this season. You know, you talked about he had a key role last year with the club, but gave up a lot of walks. This year, it looks like he just his command is much better. What tell us, in your opinion, what really has led to him being so successful this year?
Yeah, his fastball's up a tick from last season. You know, he's comping around 94 or something like that. But he was a guy that, you know, as much as we called upon him a season ago, it was usually to try to bridge that gap between the starter going 5-6 innings until we get to Walters and then Riley Farrell in the 8th and 9th. And I think his confidence is continuing to grow. It's continuing to get better. You know, he's working at a little bit quicker pace, I think taking a little bit of the mental aspect out of it. I know we all got to speed up with the pitch clock, but, you know, for Chuck, he just kind of goes out there, goes about his business, and I think for him, the biggest key is, you know, he's just relying on his stuff. He knows what he can throw, and sometimes it's as simple as you don't overthink it, and, you know, a lot of times, and, you know, we can be our own worst enemy mentally, talk ourselves out of something, and I don't know that that's necessarily what was going on with him, but because he was a good pitcher for his last season. He was, you know, going well, and but like you said, the walks were maybe a little bit of an issue. I know he put in a lot of work this off season, that he's really worked on his craft and in trying to make that as good as possible. But you know, you feel really confident when you go to the ninth inning and you've got him to rely on. Yeah, he'll give up a base run or two. It seems like, you know, it's very rarely. I think he's had a 1-2-3 ninth, so maybe they'll be a little traffic on the bases, what have you, but he trusts his stuff, and he knows he has good stuff. You'll see a lot of heat, but his off-speed, the complimentary pitches, they seem to be breaking a little bit better in 2023, and I think you add all that together, and you see the dominant closer that we have this season.
I think another thing I've been amazed by is just the way Mike Meyer's been pushing the buttons on the pitching staff, and you see a guy like Neil Lang, who, let's face it, it wasn't working out with him in the rotation this year. Since he's gone to the bullpen, he's been stellar. Brady Stover, who Fargo flat-out let go, I think he's obviously your eighth-inning guy now. Bo Bonvalan, that Kansas City got rid of, Mike took a chance on. And then I thought the best story, you know, Tanner and I, you and I were doing the game in Kane County when Seth Miller just got absolutely clobbered by Kane County, and we're thinking, okay, what are they going to do with him? Well, since then, he's become a reliable starter. So talk a bit on what you've seen out of the moves that Mike has made with the pitching staff as the season has gone along.
Yeah, that's been one of my favorite things, Kevin, is watching how Mike interacts with the guys, because, you know, obviously I get to see the team from a little bit different lens in the public, a closer lens, and you know, it's been fun to see when he's challenging it. Like, he has a really good feel of the locker room, the clubhouse. He's kind of got his fingers on the pulse. And he knows when, you know, you need to step aside and kind of let the guys work through something. Then he knows when he needs to rear back and challenge you and try to push you a little bit farther. And, you know, I think that's a skill that, you know, not a lot of managers, coaches, whatever sport it may be, I don't know that a lot of guys have that, and Mike is very, you know, he's done this a long time. He's experienced. He's cerebral about the process, but, you know, there's a human element to the game too, and he knows that, and he implements that in his managerial style. And, you know, that's been one of the things that, you know, I've really enjoyed watching, you know, kind of come into fruition with him this season. Is, you know, he takes a lot of criticism, and, you know, he knows what the last couple of years have been, and yet, you know, he stays true to himself and what he believes it'll work, and it's been fun to be able to see that transpire and reach a few new heights this season that maybe the Birds have never done before. You know, with this 8-game winning streak, we have a chance to go for 9. We've never done that in the association. And then 40 wins, you know, first time in 5 years that the Birds have been able to say that. So getting back to reaching, you know, some of the new heights that, you know, we haven't here in a few years has been really cool. I know Mike cares. He puts in the work, and he's super dedicated to it, and it's really cool to see him kind of get rewarded for it this season.
You know, I think one of the more interesting stories in the league this year, Tanner, has been Mike Hart, a guy that's been around the league for a while, had a big home run number last year in Schaumburg, and I thought, well, okay, Schaumburg, you know, no offense to the Frontier League, but I didn't see that as kind of a huge thing for Mike, but boy, became an all-star, huge number this season. What's it like watching a guy like this? He's been around the league for a while, and all of a sudden he's just putting up a huge numbers and really becoming one of the most dominant forces in the league.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rob. He is so much fun to get out there and watch, not just as a player, but as a coach. Mike is very stoic, very cerebral about what he does. You know, it's not going to be a whole lot of emotion from him, but when you see it, it's appropriate, you know, and it tells you something. It could be a spark for this team. You know, he handles our defensive alignment with what he does as a coach, and I think the defense is certainly something that's taken a step forward from last year. But he just seems to have that timely hit. He's that calming veteran presence, what have you, and just seems to come up with that timely hit more often than not. And you've got a lot of guys I think you can point to as a spark plug on this team, and I certainly think he's one of them. And I think that's why you're seeing things start to turn around for Sioux Falls and really get the community back involved and excited for this season. But we're really excited to have Mike back. He's a guy who, you know, he puts his nose down and he goes to work. You know, he's been a really good shot in the arm for the team this season. And, you know, as selfish as it might be, you know, we want to make sure he stays around for a while in one capacity or another. So we're really happy he came back to us this season. And his on-field plus his off-field performance certainly is factored into what you're seeing this year.
Did they let him keep the ball when he broke the record for most times hit by a pitch in the season?
You know, I have not tracked that ball down. I wonder if somebody did go out and grab that. And, you know, honestly, it's kind of funny. You know, he's a guy that loves to get on base any way possible. And I think that's one of the ways that he leads by example. He's willing to sacrifice the body, you know, and, you know, just find ways to get aboard. Anything he can do to help his team, he will do. You know, we've seen him, you know, try to dive for a base to beat a throw sometimes. We've seen him lay out, sacrifice the body, playing first base. And, you know, it takes a little bit of a toll on you as he gets closer to 30. But, hey, I tell you, he's leading by example, and the guys do respond to that.
As you look at this club right now, moved into a tie for second place, really on a roll of late. But you talked about there's another level that you feel that this club has. What do you kind of see as the potential over these last 20 games of the season?
Yeah, I'm excited to find out. I think that we can continue to elevate from where we're at right now. I don't think this is our best baseball, and I don't think the guys think that either. You know, it's cool to be back in the postseason. You know, it will be cool if we can get back to 500. And by what I mean by that is in the postseason picture. But, you know, that's all cool. That's all well and good. But this team has its sights set on more. Right now, the immediate goal would be trying to find a way to chase down Kansas City. You know, we've got the whiteboard in the clubhouse, and it's not how many games are we out of playoff position, how many games are we below 500. What's written up there and updated daily is how many games are we out of first place. And, you know, and I do like that about this team. I think a lot of teams, especially given the lack of success Sioux Falls has had over the years, you might think if you can get into the postseason and that playoff drought, you're pretty happy with that. But these guys have their sights set on something more, and I think that's going to continue to translate as we get deeper and deeper into the season. Now, does that mean we're going to go 19-0 the rest of the way? Probably not, you know, but I tell you what, this is a team that really does feel like they can hit another level, continue to tighten things up, and maybe even make a push here to get better onto the field over the last 20 games.
Do you think that speaks to the combination of the veterans leading this team, but yet you got a good core of young players that, hey, they're fresh out of college. They don't care what the Sioux Falls Canaries of 2019-2021 did. You know, this whole thing is fresh to them. I suppose it helps that they come in with an open mind, like, we don't care about the past. We weren't here. Let's go get it done.
Yeah, you know, I've been talking to a few of the guys, particularly the young guys, and for a lot of them, this is their first playoff push, you know. You know, a lot of guys are excited to be playing meaningful baseball at this point in the season. Some guys who've, you know, are new to pro baseball, or they've been on some teams that have been very good in the past, you know. And I think some of the veteran guys that we have on this team, guys who have been here a while, as talented as they are, maybe just bringing in some vets with fresh lenses, guys like Darnell Sweeney and Mike Hart, and, you know, guys who, you know, the past is the past. We had nothing to do in that. All we can control is what we do now. And I I think that bringing in that fresh perspective really sets the tone for a lot of guys. And, you know, that's cool to see. I really like the mix of guys that we have between veterans and rookies and everything in between. And, you know, I think the clubhouse right now, everything is just kind of gelled. You know, everything feels like it's in a good place. You know, the team cares about each other. They're invested. And the chemistry is as good. And, you know, I've only been here a little less than 2 years, but this is as good as I've ever felt it. You know, I've watched the league from afar for a number of years before coming to Sioux Falls, and this is a really fun team. I'm really excited about this team, and you know, I tell you, the clubhouse just has a great vibe right now. A group of guys that love being around each other, and tell you what, that day when it all ends, no matter how it ends, that's going to be tough. There are going to be a lot of hard goodbyes for these guys because, you know, you're never going to get everybody back on the same roster the next season. But this group truly loves each other, and I think you're seeing that translate onto the field.
Let me ask your personal observation for a moment, Tanner, because, I like you said, you've only been here with the team a little less than 2 years, but, you know, you build strong relationships with the community, with Mike Meyer, with Duell, and people involved in the organization. How special is this to you personally to see the club playing so well?
You know, it really is. You know, I still live by the motto that any day you're going to a ballpark, you're at some kind of stadium, you know, that is a good day. But being a part of a playoff race and, you know, something like this, baseball in particular, where it's such a culture, it's a culture unique in and of itself from other sports, seeing that, you know, over the course of a season that really is a marathon rather than a sprint, you know, you're invested for 4 months and 100 nights over the year, seeing all of that translate and guys achieving their potential or getting close to achieving their potential and, you know, things like that, that's special because there's a lot of work that goes into this beyond what you see on the field. You mentioned Duell, and you know, I'm glad that you did. Duell, Brian Jamrose, our team president, Allie and Whitney, and the sales guys on the front office, you know, they're working very hard to make sure that this is a fun experience for everybody. John Gaskins, our director of entertainment, John Witt, our clubhouse manager, you know, all those guys put in a lot of work to make what happens on the field possible that, you know, don't always get recognized. And, you know, our success as a team truly is that. It is everybody's success in this organization and in this city. And you know, I've been blessed to get to know some of our fans, our season ticket holders. And, you know, there is just an excitement that hasn't been there, it feels like, in a long time. It's a great community. I love the community of Sioux Falls. And, you know, these people, they deserve a winner here. And I'm excited to see how this thing all plays out because it's been a lot of fun to be part of this ride this season.
Now, we should mention to you today, here at this week in the Association of Minor League Sports Report, we named Mitchell Walters as the pitcher of the week. Fantastic week for him, 2-0, 2.25 ERA, great outing on Sunday. You talked about last year he was kind of that guy working in the bullpen in late innings. They move him into the starting rotation. How special has it been for you to watch him this season?
It's been really special, and thank you guys for that honor, by the way. In my unbiased opinion, it was well-deserved. But Mitch, you know, to see his success this season, I think is one of the better success stories, if not underrated success stories, around the league this season. You know, we always knew Mitch could throw hard. We always knew that fastball was going to be 92, 93, maybe 94. But could you get length out of him? Could you get some of that complimentary, you know, your breaking stuff? Can you get that to work more consistently? I think we're the two biggest question marks going into this offseason. Now, I tell you what, he put his nose down and he worked hard this offseason and has kept his arm in great shape, feeling good. And, you know, I think he's added a little bit of zip to his fastball. He always, you know, has had that as part of his game. But his breaking stuff, I think, is noticeably improved from last season. He gets a lot of ground ball outs, which, you know, is a recipe for success when you're pitching at the birdcage. You know, he's a guy that has put in the work this offseason. And like anything, like anybody, you're excited when you see somebody who's worked so hard to perfect their craft and they're just relentless about it, to see them get rewarded. It's really special. So I couldn't be happier for Mitch on the season he's having.
Now, coming up, the Canaries head down to Kansas City for a big three-game series. Then you're coming home for three against Sioux City, the second-place team. Do you see the ball club feeling like, hey, we still got something to prove, or is it just kind of just six more games for them?
No, we absolutely feel like we have something more to prove. We're excited that the league is kind of being, you know, kind of taking notice of what we're doing, but we still feel like there's a standard that we can hold ourselves to, that we can still achieve. And, you know, I think it proved something to ourselves, and, you know, I think we continue to find our belief grows. But sweeping a team like Milwaukee, I feel like did prove something to ourselves. And, you know, Kansas City's always been a tough place for us to go play. It's tough for anybody to go play, but we won our last time we were there, snapped a lengthy losing skid at that venue, and, you know, hopefully exercising some of those demons can help you out. You know, we're not taking anybody lightly. Nobody's getting overinflated ego. Nobody's head's getting too big, which I love. I think that can be very easy, you know, for a team who's playing hot to suffer from that ego. But these guys know that there's still a long way to go. We haven't accomplished anything yet. We are still shy of getting to first place and entering the playoffs, playing our best baseball. And I think those are the two things the guys are focusing on more than anything, not how many games we win in a row or against who, just finding a way to continue to chase the division championship and ultimately a league championship.
Now, I want to ask you about an interesting scheduling quirk that I think for you guys is that in that last week of the season, you guys are off on Monday and then off on Thursday as well. And I thought, wow, that really means you could just burn your bullpen on those Tuesday and Wednesday games and then know you still have a fresh bullpen. Am I overthinking that, or do you really see that as an advantage?
You know, I can see where that would be an advantage. I know Mike and Ty Colbreth. You know, those are going to be the guys who probably look at that, and that's going to mean more to them than it would to me. But, you know, they do a great job managing their guys and making sure guys are feeling good, feeling rested, whatever it may be. So, you know, having an extra day off when, you know, it may be the most meaningful week of the season coming up. Yeah, that's what you hope, right, is the last week is the most meaningful one. Anytime you get an extra day off, get a little more rest, I think that's a good thing. So I know Mike and Ty, you know, they're probably, as we speak, they're probably planning all this out right now and starting to figure, you know, not too far ahead, not the not too distant future, what we could be looking at, what the plan could be, you know, with the series at Cleburne coming up. And, you know, they very well maybe planned for something. You know, that's one of those things I'm sure, I guarantee that they're already plotting for. They've got some kind of tentative plan in place. So, you know, I do think that matters. But I know it matters more to them, you know, the guys who have that plan. For me, it's, you know, do I show up at the park? Do I not? But, you know, I can absolutely see the benefit to that.
Well, that's fantastic, Tanner. Man, always great talking to you. And since you're a veteran guest now, you know you get to give us a final thought. So whatever you'd like to talk about, the floor is yours.
Well, I appreciate you guys. You know, it's really cool to see heights being reached that, you know, haven't during my short tenure here, and, you know, that Sioux Falls as a community hasn't seen for a little bit now. And, you know, reaching 40 wins, you know, first time we've done that since 2018. We've won 27 home games, the most since 2012. You know, we're ultimately the only thing that matters, and, you know, we'll take time and reflect on what we have accomplished when things, you know, settle down, everybody goes back home once the season ends, whenever and wherever that may be. But we will take some time to reflect on everything, but ultimately it's still breaking that streak that, you know, we haven't since 2008, and that's winning an association championship. And tell you what, don't tell anybody that the Canaries aren't contenders for that. They won't believe you. And, tell you what, they're a confident group right now, and it's really fun to see them go out there with the belief that they can do something special.
That's fantastic. Tanner Hoops, thanks for joining us this week.
Rob, Kevin, appreciate you guys. I'm happy to be on with you anytime. Thanks for all you do.
Well, Kevin, great having Tanner Hoops on, and fun to hear him have a lot of excitement for his team right now.
You know, I've had the pleasure of doing some color for him for four different Canaries games this summer, and, you know, a great guy to work with, and I'm just glad that he's getting to see the fruits of his labor in the form of a very good team on the field right now with the Sioux Falls Canaries.
Yeah, very exciting team too, Kevin, and You know, we talked about Mitchell Walters being named today by us as the pitcher of the week. Ty Culbreth is kind of turning things around for them. And this was one of those teams that you and I looked at early on and were like, wow, there's so much good about this team. We just don't understand why they're not winning right now. But, man, finally putting it all together. And good for Sioux Falls. Hopefully Sioux Falls will get to watch some playoff baseball this year.
Yeah, you know, and I think that market's just, you know, there's the fan base. They're just begging, you know, hey, give us a reason to come out to the park. You know, at one time this franchise drew 3,000 a game, and there was, you know, they had a pretty decent following, but I just think all the years where the Canaries didn't contend, people just kind of dropped off, and that along with the ball birdcage being in a little less than stellar condition. But, you know, I think they've got like 9 home games left, and it would be nice to see this city take notice that, hey, there's a pretty good product out here. We're going to get entertained, and we're going to see a good ball team.
The one thing personally for me that I love seeing this team doing so well is this should secure Mike Meyer for next season. I mean, I never want to say never kind of thing there, but Mike's phenomenal guy. I'm just happy to see this team winning. Not a better guy out there that, you know, you've got to watch him pitch for St. Paul, and just a great human being. And I couldn't be more happy for him out there, Kevin, that they're having this kind of success right now.
Yeah. You know, how many times have we talked in the show where we're just, you know, we're kind of a lost. How many different ways can you say this team is just kind of meddling? You know, I think some weeks we're like, well, geez, I don't even know what to say about this club. But, gosh, it's nice to be able to, you know, have Tanner on and talk about how great this club's been performing. And I just think, in general, you know, let's put our league hats on right now. It's good to have all the franchises in the league having a stretch where they can say, hey, you know what, our team's pretty darn good right now. It's been fun to follow. So I just think it's a good time.
Very good point to make there is that, you know, from the league standpoint, they want to make sure every team is competitive as possible. And Sioux Falls is doing more than being competitive right now, that's for sure. Okay, but we're going to do this our look at this league a little differently this week. Since we started the number 4 team with Sioux Falls, let's go down the list, and then we'll jump into the top 3 at the end here. So we'll start with the Cleburne Railroaders at number 5. Cleburne currently right now, I'm going to pull back this beer, is in 4th place, dropped to 4th place in the East Division, 5-5 in the last 10, 6 out of 1st place Milwaukee, holding on to that spot over King County by a game right now. You know, you talk about the enigmas that are the Lincoln Salt Dogs. Cleburne's kind of in that boat, too, and just can't seem to figure out how to win a series at home right now, Kevin. It's kind of weird.
I thought last night they had it in the bag, but I, without being in Cleburne myself to see what's going on, I'm not understanding the choice right now of trotting out Nick Gardewine for 9th innings. I get it. He's pitched in the majors, and he was very good for this team last year. But let's be honest. Since he's been back, he's not been stellar, and I think you've got better arms to go with in the 9th inning right now. They're pitching better with Joe Corbett and Michael Krause, and that cost Cleburne a series win against Lake Country. I know it's one game, but when you look back on it, going 4-2 against a divisional opponent looks a hell of a lot better than 3-3, and I'm sure Logan Watkins has his reasons, but I'm, you know, from someone that's looking at it from my view, it didn't make a lot of sense. And I think that's something that the Railroaders are going to have to take a look at as they go into a huge 6-game set, this time on the road against the Chicago Dogs.
You know, it's interesting, Kevin, because you talk all season long about this team and you look at me and go, wow, you know you're going to get a bunch of hitting. You just hope that they can, you know, mingle together a good enough group of arms to wind up giving them a solid stretch of games. They were very solid in that entire series against Lake Country. You got just a very good pitching performance out of there. But, man, you talk about how narrow the margin is between winning games and losing games. You send your guy out there who was just dominant last year, expecting to win game, it close out the game for you, and he winds up losing that, and all of a sudden a 4-2 series goes to 3-3, and you didn't really advance any at all this week at home. I wonder what the psychological part of that is for this team, that you finally get some pitching, and then you just don't win games like you should.
And it's the timing of it, too, that it was the final inning of the series, and that's the memory you take with you on that long bus trip up to Chicago, unless they were flying. Of course, we know that they have been known to do that at times.
Yeah, interesting dynamic for this team, and you know, how they pull that together, we're going to wind up seeing here. But let's jump to number six, the team they'll be facing this week. Kevin, as you mentioned there, the Chicago Dogs, who are currently in second place, still hanging on second place in the East Division, 41-38, four games behind Milwaukee, hold a game and a half over Lake Country, who's trying to get into that, out of that third spot and into the second spot. Chicago, Kevin, a team that had some sensational weeks for them, sensational games, I should say, for them this week. Really a club that is getting some interesting performances, especially in the batting order right now. And as you look at this club heading down the stretch, they had that huge series against Cleburne. What do you think about this team entering that series?
I think Chicago's got to look at it like this is our chance. If we go 5-1 against Cleburne, that's a team we can put in the rearview mirror for a while. I have to bring this up though. Chicago made my favorite acquisition of the year in the name game by signing Johnny Turbo. I mean, come on. That name screams baseball. And the guy can run. He's already got two stolen bases for them.
Yeah, four and five games. Johnny, how about that?
Oh, Johnny Turbo. Yeah, the averages are there, but I mean, the same team that brought us General MacArthur the fourth now gives us Johnny Turbo. I don't know how they can top this. They got another guy on the team with three E's and five letters in his last name with Eels.
This is the team with the name game team. We're definitely going. They're going to make Jack Michaels work in that name game.
I think so. What's your Mount Rushmore of?
It's impressive too, Kevin. And one guy we have not talked a lot about this season, Kevin, but a guy we've talked a great deal about over the years. Ryan Lidge continues to light things up for the team. .321 batting average, had another sensational week for the club. I still don't understand why he hasn't got a double A or triple A contract somewhere, but okay. But if you're a Chicago fan, you're getting to watch one of the best all-around players you're going to find in American Association Baseball, and Ryan Lidge, and continues to just be a continual force for this team.
You know, just in the last week, we've seen Reggie Abercrombie get his jersey retired with the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, and Chase Simpson got his retired by the Cleburne Railroaders. I'm seeing Ryan Lidge emerging as a guy that's becoming a franchise-like player for Chicago, and he could very well, once his days wind down in pro baseball, we could see Lidge as a guy that will have his jersey retired and his number hanging up at Impact Field. I just think that's the kind of impact he's had on this club in his 3 years with them.
I agree. Dropping to the Lake Country Dockhounds, seventh in the power rankings this week. Lake Country in third place, 40-40, 5.5 games behind Milwaukee, 1.5 games behind Chicago. You talk about how kind of it was a disappointing end for Cleburne. Now they got to go on a bus ride to head out of town. Lake Country drops the first two games in Cleburne. Looks like they're going to drop that final game. It comes out of 3 out of 4 games they win to close out that series, including that big ninth inning victory. This team's got to be riding high right now.
Oh, I think so. And, you know, I was watching the American Association wrap around, and I believe they mentioned that Brian Ray is retiring from professional baseball. If that's the case, that is a big blow for this team. You know, you folks can go back and listen to that. But although his average doesn't show it, Curtis Terry has turned into a monster acquisition for this team. 13 home runs, 27 RBIs in 24 games. Let's roll that out. If he played 96 games at this pace, he would have 52 home runs. Now, that would be a home run record I don't think anyone else could touch.
No. And, you know, the batting average is improving, too, Kevin. He was at 170 just 10 games ago, up to 244 right now. So 74 points he's raised his batting average without the home run numbers dropping off. You know, I mean, it's like, it's just a phenomenal streak that this guy is on right now. And the team riding with him, that's the great thing about it. Sometimes you see those big home run numbers pop up, and the team doesn't really do anything with it. But Lake Country loving their power hitter, I think hitting 8 in the lineup, and they're riding right along with him.
But, you know, the thing with Lake Country still, it's going to be, can you get enough pitching? You know, I think I had described in the blog as Lake Country is the East Division version of the Canaries in that. You know the offense is going to hum along, but will your pitching staff have enough to help them out? So that will be something you got to definitely keep an eye out for as the last 20 games unfold.
We move on to the number 8 team in the rankings, the Lincoln Salt Dogs, currently in fourth place in the Western Division, 39-40, seven games, technically in third place. I guess they are tied with Sioux Falls right at the moment, but 39-40, seven games behind Kansas City, one game ahead of Fargo-Moorhead. That's the big number to be watching right now if you're a Lincoln fan. Kevin, I know you talked about it in the blog there. It's a team that you just never really sure what you're going to get out of them, but came away with two big victories against Kansas City in their series over the weekend, so including a franchise record 20 runs on Saturday. So this club can do some things for you and maybe the most dangerous team entering the playoffs.
Well, let's look at that. For the week, they scored 35 runs. 20 of them were in one game. So then the same offense only put up 15 runs in five games. And that's where, you know, my line about the Lincoln Enigmatics rears its head again. And, you know, I think this year's home run derby curse has definitely been bestowed upon Connor Panis because things have not gone well for him, and seemingly ever since the All-Star break, and Panis was a guy that was quite a catalyst for this team in the first half. So it's a team that's going to be hard to figure out. They got a three-game setup in Fargo-Moorhead against a struggling Redhawks team, maybe catching them at the right time. So I think that's going to be a pretty interesting matchup there. You know, pitching-wise, until he stumbled against Kansas City, I was liking the work that, trying to find his stats here, I hope he didn't get released. Tanner Brown was throwing really well until he had 9 runs in 2 2/3. Granted, the offense helped him out. That was game they won 20-13, but before that, Brown had 3 very good starts. And on a team where there's not a lot of starting pitching depth, you'd hope that for Brown's sake, you shake off the bad start and keep throwing like you have been. David Holmberg, we know what he's going to bring. Zach Keenan's been decent. I think you hope that Josh Rader can get back on track. So, like I said, this is going to be a hard team to figure out, but if nothing else, are going to be interesting.
Yeah, the kind of crazy thing about this club is they go to Winnipeg, and I understand Winnipeg is never an easy place to play. But that's the last place team in the division right now, and they lose both those games. The other game is rained out, postponed until August 18th. Then they come home, a place they haven't played particularly well this season. Kansas City comes into town, the best team in the division. They're the best team in the American Association right now. And you win two of those three games. Had a battle back to almost win on Sunday as well. It's like, what is going on here? And it is very perplexing. Right now, I think if there's one thing you can hang your hat on to feel pretty good about this club, they did not play well at home early on in the year. Okay? I mean, they were just a terrible team at home. But have played fairly well there. So, 6-4, including taking 2 out of 4 from Kane County, taking 2 out of 4 from Chicago, now 2 out of 3 from Chicago, 2 out of 3 from Kansas City. They're proving that they can win on their own field against top-notch opponents, and maybe that's all you need to do to try to win a championship.
It could very well be. You know, I'm looking at their schedule, and this is a big week for them. They go to Fargo-Moorhead 4-3. Then they come back home. Granted, they stumbled against them earlier in the year at home, but they have 4 games against the Winnipeg team who very well may be just kind of playing out the string by then. So if there's a week where Lincoln can start getting on a roll, this would be the week for it. They follow that by going to Kansas City, and then, I'm sorry, they'll host Kansas City again. Then they go to Sioux Falls. So, you know, the next week the schedule gets tougher. So this is a big week for this Lincoln South Dogs ball club.
Next up is the Enigmas of the East, the King County Cougars, Kevin, who entered this week coming in fifth place in the East Division, 39-42, 7 games out of Milwaukee. Most important game, a game behind Cleburne right now, 3-7 in their last 10. A team that was on a roll, Kevin. I mean, this club had come up with a huge winning streak at the end of July, won 6 straight games, including taking 2 from Fargo, sweeping Kansas City. Then they continue to roll on. 4 out of 6 they took when Cleburne came to town. All of a sudden travel to Sioux Falls, get swept, travel on to Gary, lose 2 out of 3. Kevin Luca, what's going on here?
No offense, but no offense. And it was evidenced in the Sioux Falls series, too, where they're just not scoring runs. They're not getting clutch hits. They're getting thrown out trying to take extra bases when they shouldn't. I think the epitome was when their young catcher, Cristino, missed first base in what would have been a leadoff double and the tying run at second base and flat out missed first base. I think that's been the story with this Cougars team. Jimmy Kerrigan was released, and now this week Pete Cosmo was released. Granted, they weren't putting up the numbers that would justify the money they were making, but nobody has stepped up and taken on that role with the offense. Cornelius Randolph was injured on Thursday. He was not put on an injured list, but he did not play the entire series in Gary. And now Donovan Williams, who was a nice pickup for them and was hitting well, was released. We don't know the story there. It could be an injury. It could be a myriad of things. But right now, this ball club is just not putting up runs. And unless they can, they're really wasting some pretty good pitching performances by this Cougars ball club.
You know, and the interesting part of that, too, Kevin, is that Nick Belzer was signed. We thought, man, look at that guy. The number 5 starter, Nick Belzer, he has not pitched well for them recently. He's hammered this week for 6 runs and 10 innings that he gave up in his 2 starts. This is a team, and we said from day one, that you're not going to get a ton of offense. George Samus has made a number of nice moves to try to improve the offense. It's not working right at the moment, but they were going to have to win with getting great pitching. And 5.14 ERA over 7 games is not going to do it. And you can easily look at that and say, okay, we get why this team is 1-5. They're just not pitching as well either. And this club has got to win 3-1, I think, almost every night if they're going to wind up getting in a playoff spot.
And I just don't see that as being a blueprint for success. It just makes me wonder right now this ball club has 21 players on the roster. Will we be seeing a major signing to try to boost this offense? That's the thing I would be looking for if I was a Kane County fan at this point. You know, they're right in the thick of the playoff race. All you need is a chip and a chair. But right now, with the way that, I mean, I kind of disagree with you with on the pitching front. The pitching has still, you know, I thought the pitching was good in the Sioux Falls series. You know, numbers are numbers and what have you. But I just think right now the offense is holding this team back. And frankly, you know, as a pitcher, I think sometimes you get frustrated if you pitch your tail off, give a good quality start, and then you don't get any support. You know, they eat at you after a while.
You could be right about that. And the interesting thing is, as you said, they released a lot of veteran guys on this team. So there's a lot of money out there that's available for this club if they wanted to go out and try to sign somebody, especially for just a month left in the season. That's opening up a lot of cap space for you. And 21 players. George Samus, we know. Kevin, we know George Samus always has some key moves down the stretch here, so it wouldn't be surprised to see him come up with a big move right now.
Yeah, it's just a matter of who's out there.
Well, let's go to the number 10 team in the rankings, and that is the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, who are in fifth place now. I can't believe I'm saying that, but that's where they are, 38-41, one game behind Lincoln and Sioux Falls for fourth place. Currently eight games behind Kansas City. You know, first of all, we love Chris Gost and Anthony Ryan. Both of them are fantastic guys. You and I have got to know a lot of the guys on this team, and this is a first-class organization in every way. This slump is just stunning to me, and I get the pitching problem of this, but after they swept that series in Winnipeg a couple weeks ago, Kevin, I think both of us looked at that and thought, okay, they were in a little bit of a doldrums, but they got out of it. 3-10 since then, including losing 3 in Sioux City. Sioux Falls came to Fargo and took 2 of those 3 games. Sioux City came to Fargo and took 2 of those 3 games. They go to Winnipeg and drop 2 of the 3 there. It's like, man, this team, I don't know if they can turn things around in this last 20 games and get something going here.
I'm not seeing a lot of signs of optimism, especially coming out of the pitching staff, although Colton Davis threw a very good ball game in Winnipeg, and Kevin McGovern just keeps doing Kevin McGovern kind of things. But after this, what's been out there, Carell Prime has been getting hammered on a consistent basis. Tyler Grauer, who felt something in his elbow before a start against Winnipeg and didn't pitch. He rested up, and then after that, he just has not been himself. His ERA for the year now up to 4.5. The last two starts, he's given up 5 runs in 5 innings, and that's just not Tyler Grauer-like work. So you have to wonder how healthy he is right now. Kelvin Pilot, who was brought in from the Pioneer League, has been adequate, but not a guy that's going to save the season. So you just wonder what the mindset of the ball club is right now.
Yeah, oh, Kevin, too, they get Dylan Thomas back. And you thought, okay, well, this is going to be that little extra something that gets things going. But this offense is just died. 224 this week they hit. Scott Schreiber continues to be unreal for this club. Another 409 week, but man, I don't think I've seen a team where you go 9 guys on this club could be hitting 300 or 290 or 280 or something like that, but just nobody is producing for here. It's stunning to me, and you can't look at the manager, you know, or Anthony Renz on this. That these guys are professionals. They won a championship last year. Most of these same guys are here. It's just they're just not getting it together. And could Fargo-Moorhead be missing the playoffs this year, Kevin?
You look at the lineup then. Schreiber, Boscan, Evan Alexander, Leo Pena, Those are guys that any lineup would like to have. Dylan Thomas, obviously. But there's just not a lot of depth after that. Alec Olin had a nice run, but he's been dropping off. Nick Novak, same thing. Had a good run. He's tailed off. And, you know, if you only got five guys going well in your batting order, it's going to make it pretty easy for the opposing pitchers. So I find it, you know, it seems inconceivable with the consistent winning this Fargo-Moorhead team has put together in the last 5 years to even say this, but I got to agree with you. I have my doubts about this team making the playoffs.
Well, let's drop to the number 11 team in the rankings this week, the Gary South Shore Railcats, last place in the East Division, 10.5 games out of first, more importantly, 4.5 games behind Cleburne, as they are 5-5 in their last 10. You know, Kevin, I think on Friday, I would have seriously thought, okay, we might be looking at next season. But then they get two spectacular pitching performances over the weekend, including a 1-0 victory over Kane County on Sunday. Can we stick a fork in this team, or are we thinking, man, they got a legitimate shot of still trying to get a playoff spot, especially if they can keep that pitching going?
Well, let's look at it this way, though. They beat a Kane County team that's been reeling pretty good, so might have just been a matter of catching the Cougars at the right time. You know, Simon Cowell on American Idol once described some performances as wallpaper. You know it's there, but there's nothing about it that you're going to remember. And right now, I just think Gary South Shore is kind of the American Association wallpaper. You know they're there, they're playing, but they're just not doing anything that's making you step up and take notice that this is a legit playoff team.
The interesting thing for them, Kevin, 3 games against Lake Country to start out this week, then 3 games in Kane County. And I mean, those are, you know, 2 of the teams you're chasing right now. Kane County is not in the playoff position, but still, you got to get over the top of them to get a spot. As you sweep a Kane County, let's just say, I mean, you came away 2 out of 3 victories, so that's not inconceivable to sweep that series. And you can get 1 against Lake Country, at least. So you come away with this week 4-2. Maybe you get ahead of Kane County in the standings at that particular point, but if nothing else, you're probably 2 games behind Cleburne for the 4th spot there. You know, a lot of math has to start working out for this club right now, but I think the key of what both of us would look at this and say, this pitching staff just has to continue to see what we saw on Saturday and Sunday. If they can win some 3-1 games, if they can just get that going for them, especially when you're facing a Kane County team that can't hit. If you can just get decent enough pitching, you got a shot. So maybe this team really, we can't call them out yet, I guess.
Let's see what they can do in Lake Country, though, because that's going to be a much tougher test for the pitching staff. And who knows by then what Kane County is going to look like. You know, Kane County has already been through an 8-game losing streak this year. They bounced back nicely from it. So, you know, what Kane County is Gary going to get next weekend? They could get a team that all of a sudden gets hot again. But you mentioned 4-2, and I think that they're going to have to go 4-2 this week, or else they're going to have to really kind of consider what they want to do come trade deadline, which, if people don't remember, is 10 days from the end of the regular season.
Yes, it is. And we are past the deadline where you could trade a player and you got him back after the season was over. So this is now the point where the guy's rights are completely traded away from this point on. Number 12, Kevin, in the standings here, the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, another team that looked like the season was over after dropping 5 out of 6 in Kansas City. You talked about how tough that series began, understandably so, but a nice rebound, take both those games against Lincoln and take 2 out of 3 from Fargo over the weekend. They also find themselves 4.5 out of the final playoff spot in the West Division. I think right now, Kevin, I'm the reason I'm not kind of sold that this team is gone is Max Murphy. I mean, talk about player of the week for us this week, 6.11 batting average, 3 homers and 11 RBI in 5 games. Murphy's just been ridiculous of late, and the team is just riding along with him. You know, could be back-to-back MVPs here this year for Murphy.
Wouldn't that be strange if Murphy did end up getting MVP? It would be like an Andre Dawson situation with the 1988 Chicago Cubs, where the team finishes in last place, but Dawson wins the MVP. But, you know, maybe Murphy is the kind of guy that could carry the team. But, yeah, I think this is also a crucial week for the Goldeyes, though. We talked about the 4-game series in Lincoln, and then they have to also go to Sioux City. So, you know, Winnipeg hasn't been that great on the road this year either. So, I think this week may tell a tale about what direction this team's going in.
Murphy hitting .344, 21 runs scored, 22 RBI over his last 24 games, 9 home runs in that span. Team has really rallied behind him. I think, and you could probably say this about 8 teams in the league right now, but clearly it's going to be pitching is what helps this team to reach some kind of opportunity to make it into the playoffs here, or if they can even battle to try to get one of those playoff spots. But they did get some pretty solid performances this week, Kevin. Joey Matulovich looked pretty good for them. Lennon Barroso pitched very well for them this week. RG Martinez pitched pretty well. It has primarily been working out of the bullpen, but they've given him a shot here in the starting rotation. He looked pretty good. It's you know, Travis Seabrook and Luis Ramirez didn't look particularly great this week, but they do have the makings, I think, that they could put a solid stretch together. It's just, can you depend on these 5 guys to give you 4 great starts in the last 20 games? And I would look at that right now and just say, no, I don't have confidence in that group.
You know, Lennon Barroso has been a pretty consistent pitcher in this league, and RJ Martinez has had flashes. But I think this week does tell the story of, you know, what does this team do this week? If they go on the road and go 2-4 or 1-5, I think you, as stubborn as Greg Taggart might be about it, it could be time to deal some guys and take a look at next year. I mean, Barroso, Martinez, Matulovich, they could all help teams that are looking to shore up their rotation for the playoffs. So they'll be interested to see what direction this team goes in.
11 days till the trade deadline. Let's go the opposite direction now, Kevin. Number 3 in the ranking this week, the Sioux City Explorers, 7-3 in their last 10, 4.5 behind Kansas City. More importantly to them, they're 2.5 ahead of both Sioux Falls and Lincoln in that number 2 spot in the standings. And, man, still, you got to be really impressed with where this club is at right now. Maybe not the best of weeks for them, but, wow, a team I think we were talking about might have, you know, that their season was going to be coming to a tragic end, but one of the best teams in the league right now.
And it's been all about the pitching with this team. You know, the offense, still, in my opinion, could use a few more pieces. But the pitching staff has just, night after night, has given this team a chance to win. And obviously they're doing it as the Explorers sit in second place.
You know, an interesting thing for them, Kevin, I'm sorry, I've said an interesting thing like 9 times in the show, so I got to stop saying that, but their game on Sunday was postponed because of rain. Yes, it is. Their game against Chicago was postponed. So it's going to be made up, maybe, in Chicago on the final weekend of the season. That, I'm assuming the makeup is if it needs to be, if somehow or another it impacts the standings. And I'm thinking, well, if it does, Sioux City is going to wind, and both Chicago, this is going to be for them too, are going to have 5 games in 4 days on the final weekend before we head into the playoffs. And I know neither of those managers have to be happy about that. I don't care what the breakdown is in terms of standings or something. both got to think, hey, look, if we got in the playoffs, I'd rather not play this game at all. And I wonder if that winds up being the final. Is it, hey, if we get dropped to third when we could be second, but we get in the playoffs, we just don't care. We don't want to play an extra game, so we have our staff as rested as possible. Am I wrong in that assumption, do you think?
Yes, because Sioux City was in this situation before, having to play a makeup game in Sioux Falls and then having to play five games in 4 days to wrap the season up, and they ended up playing the doubleheader on Saturday versus Sioux Falls without having any knowledge of whether it affects the standings or not. So I think for schedule integrity, the game will be made up regardless of where either team is sitting at the time. But you're right, you know, that's five games. You know, to do a little math in my head, you know, that's instead of playing a 1-9-inning game, you're playing 2-7-inning games. So that's five more innings you got to try to get out of your pitching staff, and you could. It's going to make it a little bit tougher, especially if there's playoff seeding in the picture, to line your pitching up for the playoffs also.
You talked about the incredible performance of this pitching staff of late. This is just a group that is really coming together. 3.340 ERA this month, tops in the American Association by far. We should just say more than half a run better than the next best team so far this month. The offense is just as mediocre as it gets. 253 here in August. But, man, they're still scratching out runs, though. It's not like they're winning a whole bunch of narrow victories like 2-1 or something like that. They're still putting up, you know, 9 runs in some games and 7 runs in some contests against Fargo. So, when they win, they still are getting some pretty good offense, and even though they're not getting it, the big numbers, Kevin, this offense I still think is pretty decent at least.
That's the thing, you know, you look at the numbers as a whole, and there's really not a ton to be impressed with, but it just seems like this team has a knack of getting the big hit at the right time, and that's what I believe has been the catalyst for them winning a lot of the games they have this year.
We jump to the number two team, Kevin. The Milwaukee Milkmen looked like they were about to run away with the top record in the American Association. Now dropped down to second in that category, but still first in the East, 46-35. They are 4-6 in their last 10 on a 3-game losing streak entering the week, Kevin. And it has been the pitching staff has just not been as good, especially in the starting rotation right now. Nate Hadley worked out whatever struggles he was having. He's been great in that 8th inning role. But this starting staff has just not been very good of late.
No, it hasn't. And we've seen a guy that we thought was pretty darn good this year with Frankie Bartle. He's been moved back to the bullpen. So, you know, if you're in first place and you got some doubt with your pitching staff, it's a good time to try to figure things out. But to me, it's also a little bit alarming that going into the playoffs, you may not even know who your top three pitchers are going to be going into a best-of-three series.
And you saw that they rode that out last year, Kevin, by having A.J. Shugel come in as game one starter in each of those series, and it was working out real well for them. They could sort of just work around Ryan Zimmerman coming in game two and giving them some quality innings for there, and then a cast of many for that third game of the series. But right now, Zimmerman is still pitching extremely well for this team. Gregory Vasquez had a little bit of a hiccup this week, but still has been overall spectacular. But Christian Young struggling a lot for them. Kyle Mora got hit hard this week. I don't want to just make too big a deal out of it. It's just a little minor hiccup for the club, and 5 games from now or 10 games from now, everything's back to normal.
Well, that'll be the thing. That's going to be a test for Anthony Barone, is just trying to get the ship righted once again and making sure that you're going to win the East Division and preferably win it running away so you can have that time to figure out who your go-to guys are going to be for the playoffs and get them ready for the series.
I want to ask this on you here for a moment, because Bartow was pitching well. I mean, extremely well, but is really struggling lately. Christian Young struggling lately. Kyle Moore struggling lately. The first season they've had of these guys being full-time starting pitchers in professional baseball. And is it just a matter of the innings pitched is a problem for them? And if they let Juan Echeverria get in there and go with a six-man rotation for a while, let's just say, for example, that maybe this problem works itself out.
No, I think you just narrow down to the five guys you want, and let's get the guys used to the roles that they're likely going to be in come playoff time.
We jump to the number one team, Kevin. We say this almost every week, it seems like. The Kansas City Monarchs, 46-33, holding the top record by 4.5 over the Sioux City Explorers in the West Division, top record overall. Kansas City continues to be the phenom of the league. Despite losing 2 out of 3 in Lincoln, they go up to Milwaukee. When this was, both those teams were battling for the top record in the league. Kansas City comes away with 2 of those 3 games, drops 2 of 3 in Lincoln, but I still look at this as a very successful week for the Kansas City Monarchs.
I think so. You know, a lot of times the adage is you play 500 on the road and then make your run at home. So I would say the road trip was a success for the Monarchs, in spite of that speed bump on Saturday night in Lincoln. So, you know, credit them too for not letting that linger. They came back and won a low scoring game on Sunday afternoon to salvage a game in the series. So, you know, I really am looking forward to seeing how they match up with Sioux Falls this week down in Kansas City. So it will be interesting to see how that matchup goes.
I think if you're looking at one super bright spot for this week, Kevin, we talked last week about we weren't really sure if Patrick Weigel was the guy to be closing out games for them. He wasn't dominating, but came in both times this week and closed out contests, looked very solid in both of those outings. If you're Joe Calfa-Pietri, are you sure that Weigel is your guy and you can have confidence he's going to win game or finish off games for you so you win a championship?
I think at some point you really have to narrow down to who is going to be your guy. You know, last year there was a lot of questions throughout the year too, and they end up going with Alex Valdez, who came in really late in the year. And I just don't, you know, the numbers support it. He had an ERA of 1.08, and granted it was only 8.1 innings pitch, but Valdez has not had those kind of numbers this year. So I think at some point you really got to figure out who's going to be your guy. And like I just said with the milkman, get these guys used to what their roles are going to be come playoff time. You know, I thought that when Bobby Lawson was brought in and he got a save, I thought, well, maybe that's the guy they're going to go to also. And in the long run, he could. 4 games, a little less than 4 innings pitch, but struck out 7 guys and then it's not giving up an earned run. So we'll see what direction the Monarchs go with as far as their ninth inning man. And it could be a situational thing, too, where they just feel matches up better against the hitters coming up.
Well, it should be interesting after this week. You got to figure that most teams will be a little bit more serious about whether they think they have a legitimate shot of not just making the playoffs, but going a long way if they were to get 1 or 2 pieces. And if you think about Garrett, right now I would say the 2 teams that I guess you look at and you say have the least likely chance of breaking the playoffs, just simply because where they're at, would be Gary and Winnipeg. So if you look at those 2 rosters, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot right now with this here, Kevin, but if you look on these 2 rosters right now, there are some sensational pieces out there that both clubs could dangle out there to a team chasing a championship aspiration and get some positive pieces back. And if you look at between the two, I don't think Murphy's going anywhere. I don't think Larice Rivera is going anywhere. some of those guys like that. But who would be the one guy that you would not be surprised to see moved to a Milwaukee or a Kansas City or a Sioux City or somebody like that?
I guess if you're looking at pitching, you know, I'm going to try to break this down by team and looking at stats here. It could be a guy like Matulovic, Landon Barasa that could move on. I would say Samuel Adames, but Adames is injured at this right now. I don't know if that's long-term or not. Otherwise, he's a guy that could go somewhere and maybe get locked in as a closer. But I would say one of the arms that have been adequate for this team this year could be a guy that gets moved to provide pitching depth come playoff time.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that if you're looking at it's going to be in the bullpen. I think that a lot of teams would be most looking, because I think most of the starting rotations of the serious playoff contenders, with the exception of Fargo Moorhead beyond Kevin McGovern right now, most of the teams I think would be pretty confident about the group that they have. And so I think Adames, DJ Wilkinson for Gary would be another guy you got to figure is going to get a lot of attention, where teams would say, wow, this guy would be so perfect in our eighth or even ninth inning role, depending on which club you're having out there. And I think also, Kevin, I just want to say, if you're looking for a guy, I think would be just, it's kind of the Colin Willis effect. Always had sensational seasons in Gary, but lived in kind of oblivion until he winds up going to Kansas City. Jesus Mariaga, I think, would be a guy that would really bolster a Kane County team and all of a sudden turn that offense around if they had him batting in the number two or three spot in that lineup. So be interesting to see if somebody's able to pull the trigger on a deal like that.
I totally agree with you on Mariaga, and that was the guy I was going to mention if you did not. And that's a guy, too, and you know, in a different lineup, could Mariaga be putting up more power numbers? But I think he would definitely be a good piece to plug into about anyone's outfield if a team is looking for that sort of depth.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump around the other independent leagues out there, our partner leagues. I gotta get used to saying that, Kevin. I don't know why that's such a big deal, but I just can't get that term down here yet. And we'll start out there with the Atlantic League, where the Lancaster Barnstormers leading a half game over the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs for first place in the North Division. In the South, it is Gastonia and High Point both tied at 18 and 12. So again, that ownership problem not causing this team any problems. Out in the Frontier League, the Lake Erie Crushers Scout Knots, that's just a crazy name to me, winds up being the player of the week, hitting 688 with 6 runs scored and 11 RBIs for Lake Erie. And John Baker, the Chips hero from the New Jersey Jackals, winds up being the pitcher of the week. I can make a Chips reference. Does anybody even know what that is, Kevin?
Well, I had to think about it for a while. You're really dated us by putting that out there.
My apologies for doing that to you. Well, I think that closes out for this week. But first, tell us, Kevin, what's going on. Give us a little town ball update. What's happening in Minnesota these days?
Well, I was going to save that for the shout-out, but you may as well just skip right to it.
Okay,
I want to give my shout-out this week to the Vesely Warriors. The Warriors began the season 2-12, but they kept playing hard, kept plugging away, came into the 8-team Region 3C playoffs as the next to final seed. And they managed to find a way to beat fourth place Montgomery at Montgomery on Thursday night. Although they almost blew an 8-2 lead in the final inning, left the tying run at third base. But then on Saturday afternoon at Lonsdale, neighboring Lonsdale, mind you, so think of these two small towns right next to each other. Lonsdale is holding community days right outside the ballpark. There's a parade. There's all kinds of games and competitions going on and bands playing. Just a huge day in Lonsdale. Vesely comes in. The team that began the season 2-12 came in and defeated the hometown Lonsdale Aces and qualified for the Minnesota State Baseball Tournament for the first time since 2002.
Wow.
So my shout-out this week is to manager Bill Dunker and the Vesely Warriors for just a phenomenal job of staying on track and finding a way to make it to the get back to the big show. Bill Dunker is a legendary figure in Minnesota baseball. He was a longtime player for the St. Patrick Irish, and he decided his playing days were over, and he took on the job of trying to rebuild the Vesely Warriors, and in 2 years he has the Warriors in the state tournament, which starts this weekend. Class A and B play together in the tournament, and then Class C, so you're looking at like 72 teams that'll be converging on four different ballparks in West Central Minnesota for 3 weeks of exciting baseball action accumulating on Labor Day with championship games for Class A, B, and then one for Class C. So exciting time if you're a Minnesota baseball fan. But like I said, shout out this week for the Vesely Warriors and best of luck in the state tournament.
It's proof to you, Kevin, that the old adage is true, that it's not how you start, but how you finish that matters most. So,
yeah, true. Definitely.
You know, Kevin, on this show, we often talk about food and great places to go eat, and it's very rarely ever that we talk about a franchise kind of thing. But this week, I want to throw out my shout-out to one particular franchise that I absolutely love. I know you're a fan here, too. Pizza Ranch. Kevin, throwing out the shout out to Pizza Ranch this week. Great place, fantastic pizza, sensational sauce, great variety, chicken is awesome. Just great place to go eat. If you're not going to Pizza Ranch, there's something wrong with you. I know you'll join me.
Oh, the chicken with the mashed potatoes, but the gravy totally makes the whole thing.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more.
And you can't beat the dessert pizza either.
No, absolutely. You know, and they have a few different kinds of desserts out there for you. You can have a dessert chocolate chip cookie, which is spectacular. Sometimes they have like little fruit Danish things that were pizzas too. Man, that's just good stuff. And I'm sorry, that's the way to go. No doubt about it. Well, Kevin and I once again want to thank Tanner Hoops for joining us this week. For Kevin Loco, I am Rob Panier, now that I'm hungry, and we'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.